This is the Visual Developers Podcast with your hosts, Lacey Kessler, Matt Varghese, and Ben Parker. Interviews, no-code reviews, tutorials, and more, we're here to talk about all things no-code.
Hey, everybody. Ben here from Visual Dev FM, back with another episode, joined as always by my co-hosts, Matt and Lacey.
Heyo.
And today we have a conversation with Nelson Abelos, who is the Pixel Geek, and you've probably seen his streams at Webflow or his own stream on his own YouTube channel, and we'll have links to all that. We're going to talk to him about all of the cool stuff that he does, and he's been such a huge part of the Webflow community and the no-code community, and super excited to get to chat with him. But before we get there, as always, we're going to talk about what's new in no-code. So to start, we're going to talk about Aaron Kornbilt. He says, after 2 years, my YouTube channel finally got some channel art. So the folks over at FinSuite are on another level. So his channel art for his YouTube channel done by FinSuite, I think it's some new art for his website too. Either way, if you don't follow Aaron on Twitter, at Aaron Core, links in the show description here, show notes to go follow him. Really cool stuff. Super excited for him. And if you're not watching his content, you're missing out because he does so many great things, no code builds and pieces that are truly a huge help. I love his content. Go check it out. Shopify. Shopify launched Shop. And Shop is an app that is designed to help people, to help surface content. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah. So I think if any people listening or if either of you are familiar, Shop replaces the Arrive app, which Shopify has had for 2 years. Essentially, Arrive would track your packages. And so it would like essentially scrape the tracking numbers from your email and then have it in one place, which is super nice. Now that has integrated into Shop app. And Shop app is essentially focused around discovery of Shopify merchants. So imagine Amazon's app, but only with Shopify merchants. And so there you can follow your favorite merchants, see their latest releases, buy products from them. It's a pretty sweet app. I think the two places where it falls short now is the buying experience is a little clunky because you can't actually like buy the product within the app itself. You click on the product and then an in-window or in-app browser pops up so you can pay for it there. And then the data gets sent back to the app, like with your tracking number and all that. And so I think there are definitely improvements to be made, but it's a great first step. I love seeing what they're doing. And if you buy on the Shop app, they're actually like every sale will go to help offset carbon emissions and things like that and help the planet, which is cool. So I can't knock on them for doing it. And it's a sweet new initiative.
Yeah, and I love that it's helping surface content and maybe goods from stores or providers that maybe you wouldn't come across otherwise. So I think it's a really awesome way to help surface some of that product.
I think discoverability is definitely going to be a big focus for them going forward. I think that's the other downfall of the app right now. It's harder, like search isn't super great and discovery isn't super great, but I think it's one of those things where it's like, hey, like they'll improve over time. And I think the goal here is to be an Amazon competitor. So hopefully we'll see it. I'm excited for it.
That's awesome. Okay. So that's the Shop app from Shopify. So definitely go check that out. Link in the show description. Sergio shared a sneak peek of Elliot. Elliot's been in beta, alpha, I don't know what, beta, I think, and you could go to their site and you could request access, try to jump in, and looks like they're launching soon.
Yeah, I saw the snippet, and the sneak peek image that he shared is sweet. Like, the back end looks amazing. And going back to Shopify, like, hey, maybe this is like a good Shopify alternative. If you don't want to use Shopify, if you have your reasons, it looks good. I hope he launches soon, or maybe he opens up, because I know they had a closed beta, that's what they were in, and then they stopped closed beta for a period of time, and then I think maybe COVID might have slowed them down, because this is the first time we've had a Elliot update in a while after they had like a weird issue way back when, and that was our last update with them. But I'm glad to see this update. I'm glad to see Elliot coming out. Hopefully they launch soon.
Yeah, they had a weird Twitter beef. That was the last time we saw them. And then it's been kind of radio silence. And I'm it's cool to see them coming back. Excited to try this out. So if it's something you try out and you have feedback, great. We can't wait to hear that. But as soon as this launches, we'll probably be giving this a run ourselves, and we'll probably even do a whole episode about it. So excited about this, though. So links in the show description so you can stay up to date. Airtable conditional logic is finally here, and I received a message about this feature from so many people. I feel like it launched in my inbox and Slack DMs and everything was just pinging. I have friends who have been waiting for this for a long time, and I think this is a really cool feature. So essentially, depending on how a user answers one question, it will show them a different step in the form. And so it was really funny to hear people who had only used it an hour to come back and say, wow, how did we survive without this feature before? Because it's so powerful, which is really cool. It just means it's one of those features that you know is super amazing and is going to give you a lot of flexibility. And so super stoked for the Airtable team to launch that feature. Pretty neat. Bubble has a new series. It's Bubble. I think they're calling it How to Build Any App on Bubble. And so essentially the tweet says, witness the true power of no code. Build your own version of any of the top 20 plus websites apps using Bubble. And some of the examples, and you can do it all without running a single line of code. Some of the examples they give are Uber, Instagram, Airbnb, Netflix, WhatsApp, TikTok, Amazon, YouTube, Dropbox, Spotify, Seamless, Pocket. Now, this is a really extensive list of apps. And I think it's really cool to see them throwing out some really awesome content.
This is probably like my favorite Bubble thing that's come out that I've seen, because I've really wanted to play with it. But, you know, sometimes like you get like tool fatigue when you're going through stuff and it's like, okay, well now let me think of something else to build and something else. And it's like, you know, you just kind of get worn out. And so this makes me excited that it's like, okay, I could see how this is built using the tool, and then kind of, if you've got some ideas lying around of like, okay, well then this Bubble might be a good platform to build this on. This is something I'm for sure going to jump in and try, because I'm really curious, like, especially like YouTube. And did you say there is a TikTok on there? I'm obsessed with TikTok right now.
Yeah.
You're not going to see me dancing on there, but it is like one of my favorite time wasters right now.
Right here first. Lacey, yeah. Dancing TikTok video coming soon.
So
the visual dev of TikTok.
Yeah. So I'm super excited about this.
It's really cool. I, you know, I've not made a secret of it. You know, some of my struggles with Bubble have been, you know, one of the things, like, Webflow makes a lot of sense to me because it's an abstraction of HTML, CSS. And so, you know, adding padding and margin and following the box model just makes sense to me. And when I get into Bubble, I've never been able to just intuitively build and build with that same power. And so I'm excited. One of the things that I've always felt like is, besides that guided tour they provide you, it felt like there's documentation, but not, you know, in the same way, like where there's this real detail and level to teach you how the tool works. Super excited about this. Thinks it's really cool. And I can't wait to dive in and see more from it. Cause I know before now it's been folks like Zero Code and stuff who've really been taking the lead on teaching folks, and that's behind a paywall for some people and they don't have access to that freely. So really cool. And if you want to see that, there's a link in the show description. Sheet to API. Nelson, who's on today's episode, tweeted that he just said, ooh, this looks cool, and gave us a link to Sheet to API, which is lets you turn any spreadsheet into an API. Essentially, you can take a Google Sheet or an Excel spreadsheet, an Excel online spreadsheet, and you can turn it into an API. So essentially, you can make calls to it, and it will return the JSON just like it was an app. And this is really neat. Now, this... there are things like this that exist, you know, there's Shitsu, Sheety, Stein HQ, where you can do this. But with all of those, I think it's normally just Google Sheets. This is really cool that it includes Microsoft and Excel as well. So something you might want to check out if you're into building based off spreadsheets. This is top of mind for us lately, but super interesting, and definitely go check that out. AWS has launched a no-code tool. So if you had AWS launching a no-code tool in 2020, you're the winner. This is not something I thought about before, but it is a really awesome tool. They're calling it AppFlow. And it's meant more for, so here are the things you can connect. Now they have a whole list of different things, and they have a blog post where you can learn about how it works. We're going to link to that here so you can go link it. But when you look at their initial documentation and landing page, they mention like Salesforce, Slack, you know, Mark II, and then essentially you can pull that into your Amazon and build app flows with it. So you can mass filter data, validate data, and then you can pass that out to an Amazon S3 bucket or Snowflake or back to Salesforce. So it looks like it's really meant more for enterprise, but I think this is a really cool step. So really, I personally, as a no coder, I have not had any builds where I'm like, I need to hook up S3 or Amazon to what I'm doing. I've not been there, but I do know some people who have, and I'm curious to hear what they're going to do with this. But it seems like this is a way to really help people who are engineering and developers take their stack and their skills and their containers to the next level without having to write so much code.
Right, for sure. I'm with you on that. Like I don't use AWS or S3 or anything like that in my projects, but I think this is cool because maybe like an unintended plus side of this is like, hey, like the developers that were like, oh, these abstraction tools can't really do what I need them to do, or they won't really give it a shot. You know, now that they're 70% of the web is run on AWS. So a lot of engineers are going to be using it. Maybe this is our opportunity to jump in and see like how no code tools can enhance their workflow. Because a lot of the examples they have, like using Datadog to integrate in app flows, or you know, making Slack events, things like that. A lot of those are things that you can do with, you know, Zapier and IntegraMAT. And maybe you could do more of those events in Zapier and IntegraMAT, but this is a great step. And so I'm pumped for it regardless. I mean, maybe one day when I do use AWS, I'll definitely be jumping in here. I wouldn't say expect a demo anytime soon, but looks sweet.
But if you've ever built like a Slash app with Slack, you know it's complicated. You can do it with Zapier, but like there's a lot there. There's a lot to it. So it's really cool to just see like them covering a lot of these things, maybe making it easier for, you know, especially like I said, enterprise customers or people who are running much larger tech stacks and more intricate setups to really do a lot. So really cool. Amazon AppFlow. That's a really cool name too, by the way. I think that's awesome. Excited to see where this goes in the future. So there is a tool out there called Atlantica, and it's their no code mobile app builder. But they've existed, but they're back with a new version. And so link in the show notes to the tweet about this, but Rafael Santos, who's I think he's the co-founder. He posted in No Code Founders Twitter that they just launched a new version of their app. And in this one, it allows you to live update data in the apps that you build. So before it was, you know, static, you built an app, you pushed it out. The data that was there was the data that was there. Now they've got that next step built in, and it looks like you can publish to the Google Play and Apple App Store for just $9 a month on their pro plan, which is really awesome. Super affordable. It's an app that we haven't played with here yet, but it's on my list of apps to try out. Seems like a really, really, really cool solution. So if you're interested in that, link in the show notes for more on this.
So would this be like a alternative to Adalo maybe? Or I'm trying to think of where this fits in the, you know, the range of app builders that we have right now.
Yeah, I think it fits in there with Adalo, Thunkable, DraftBit, now to different Glide. Varying degrees of, yeah, Glide. Yeah, so it's a progressive web app. So, I mean, there are definitely different levels of expertise. You know, DraftBit is really technical and detailed, and you know, and then you have on the other end, Bravo, which is much more approachable, which is design a Figma and set your containers right, and then you can turn it into a mobile app. I think this sits somewhere in between. Like there's probably a little bit of work setting up, but it's not super intricate and detailed, which is pretty awesome. So love this and super excited to see it come out, this new version and to try it. So we're definitely, it's something we want to get our hands on and give it a run here. And we'll probably be back on the podcast to talk more about this in the future. Next up on the list, Glide. Glide moves to tablet and desktop. So like wonders never like, oh my gosh, like of all the apps that we've covered, the app updates from Glide, they've have so many new things that they've done, you know, spreadsheet functions and all these different pieces and user login systems. This is a really cool one. So the tweet says apps aren't just for phones anymore. We're still refining this pro feature, but even though it's a pro feature, they're making it available to everyone today for free. They say they're making it free to help the thousands of people using Glide for good during the pandemic. So, you know, go grab your tablet or click install in your Chrome address bar. Now, downside here is if you use Firefox, you're not going to see this install option. But if you're using Chrome, you will. But this is really cool to see from Glide.
I think this is super cool. So is this a like a computer like app, or is this like a web? And I mean, it's a web app, obviously, but I'm trying to think like how this works, you know, being downloaded to your computer.
Yeah, I think, Ben, I think you did a test with this real quick with Ryan's List, right? Where you essentially like, you know, if any of you go to twitter.com and in your, like Ben said, in your address bar, you can hit the plus sign and you can install Twitter as a progressive web app, essentially what Glide produces, onto your computer locally. And I'm pretty sure that does the same here, right, Ben? Like if you took Ryan's List, you could essentially get that same plus sign in the address bar in Chrome specifically. And then I think it would download onto the desktop from my understanding, which is sweet. I mean, you know, it's the same functionality. And I'm sure that most of the users are going to be on mobile and then tablet and then desktop, maybe switch the last two. But I think it's still cool nonetheless.
It's really awesome. It's you go there and you just get you look on the right side of your address bar in Chrome. You just get like a little plus in the install. You install it. It opens. It's like an Electron app, or it's just wrapped. It's the same thing you'd see in your browser, but it actually shows up in the Finder. And the dock on your machine shows it as a separate app. And then, you know, you can actually have that open. So imagine if you're working in an app and you want to be able to use a key. I mean, it's just like messages for iPhone. You know, you love having your Mac because you can quickly fire off text messages to people really easily. Same thing here. If you're working in an app, being able to quickly make updates, change things, navigate around without having to be on a phone. This is super cool. Super excited for the Glide team and for this launch, because this is a huge feature. And I know a lot of people have been waiting on it. So next up on the list, Notion, somebody built a tool. In fact, let's give credit where credit is due. It's super.so, and it is by @traff on Twitter and @trillcyborg. So links to their Twitter profiles in the show notes, so you can go follow them and check it out. But what they did is they built a tool that sits on top of Notion. It essentially allows you to add custom domains and fonts to Notion. There are already some people who are using custom domains with Notion, but this extends that just a little bit. You can inject analytics or live chat scripts into a Notion doc, and you can customize your social meta tags. You can cancel anytime, but they do have a demo, and it's really cool. I mean, you're talking about custom fonts. We've talked about this before, people using, you know, Bravo uses Notion for their documentation, their help center, but being able to actually customize that font and have, you know, your open graph images, your social media pieces, all that fun stuff, have a chat bot that sits over the top of it where people can talk to you. This is a really cool third-party integration to use with Notion. I'm super excited to see how people use this. And so I can also see here this. So we found about this from Max Lind on Twitter. Thank you for tweeting about this, Max. Super cool. So link to that tweet as well in the show notes. Better Together from Webflow. Webflow has been doing amazing work. And so it's going to sound biased because I work there. But if you've been to their website, you'll notice that when you land on the webpage, they have this bar across the top that says, we're doing everything we can to help small businesses through COVID. And, you know, and it says, you know, you get there, it's a we're here for you page. And now they have a free e-commerce plan for people who need to move their business online and kind of pivot the way they do things, which is really cool. And they have free templates. Matt and I actually built one of those which is really fun. We hope you go check that out. But they have a place at the bottom where you can get an expert's help or where you can lend a hand. And Nelson, who's our guest today, he built a site to go with this where essentially you can, as an expert, jump in and see people who businesses who need help. They need help building a site, building their e-commerce store, and you can jump in and send them a message and offer to get them help. Or, you know, if you are a business, you can find experts and message them and let them know that you need help. So, and then you can apply to be a volunteer, and you can, or if you're a business, you can add your own project. This is a really cool site, and Nelson built it using JetBoost. There's a lot of cool features here.
And for what it's worth, foreshadowing the interview, Nelson actually talks about this project and the tools he used to build it, and his frustrations with current day no code tools. So keep an eye out for that if you are listening to the episode.
And then next up on the list, Thomas Bosk. He has a new portfolio in Webflow, and there's not a ton of news here. It's just that the interactions on this site are unbelievable. A lot of no-code Twitter was talking about this, especially the Webflow community. This was an amazing site. If you haven't checked it out, not only is the content amazing, but just the interactions and all the pieces that go with it are incredible. And so it's definitely something you'll want to go check out. Link in the show descriptions if you'd like to go see that.
Yeah, and it looks like Nelson also did an interview with him up on YouTube. So we'll link to that as well if you'd like to check that out and see how he did some of those really nice interactions.
Amazing. Love it. So don't miss that portfolio or that interview with Nelson. Bram, who's been on our show before, he has No Code MVP. He has started a podcast called The Early Ones. And so it's about, I think if you get me wrong, it's about those startups who are in early stages or people who are starting up their ideas and just getting started, about what it's like to get your business off the ground, what it looks like, how to position yourself. It's one of the things that he's really great at. And if you talk to Bram, it's like every product you can think of, he's used it and he's taken it for a test spin and he's tried it and he's been through all these onboarding and all these different pieces. And so he's got a really good mind around what it looks like building a product. And I'm super excited. I've already, I'm ready to subscribe and I'm in to start jumping in and listening. I haven't got to listen yet, but it is on my list. And if you're a podcast fan, which if you're listening to this, I'm assuming you are, I hope you check it out and go subscribe to Bram's podcast as well. This seems really cool. All right. And that is it for our no code roundup. So lots happening as always. We want to make sure that you know and are up to date about all the stuff that's happening in the no code world. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoy this interview that we have with Nelson, and we'll catch you all next week.
Deuce.
So, hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, listening to this podcast. For our interview today, we have Nelson, the famous NetPixel geek. I don't, it's like he's almost like Cher, Madonna. Do we even need to mention the last name? The Webflow wonder. I got my start learning Webflow from Nelson. And so we're excited to have him on the show today, but Nelson, we'll let him give some of his background. I don't want to do too much, but Nelson's worked at Webflow for almost 5 years now and has done all kinds of work at Webflow, working with the community, doing streams, working on customer support. And Nelson is one of my favorite people. And so I was excited to have him on the show. Like, if we're a no code podcast, we have to talk to Nelson. So welcome, Nelson. From Webflow.
Hi.
Hey, Nelson. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Here. Yeah.
I'm so glad you're here. So, you know, this little podcast we have, we talk about all the, like, no-code stuff in the world. I've talked about it a little bit in the intro, but for real, when I found Webflow, I was at this nonprofit. We were building like all these websites and I was like, I need something to help me. And I found Macaw just as Envision shut it down. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I found Webflow. Not only did I find Webflow, I also found your live streams. And I built a site with it, and I was like, this is crazy cool tool. I'm going to use it, but I don't know how much I can use it. And on your live streams, you were building some of the coolest stuff and really showing the power of it, and it sold me 1,000%. So I guess I'm curious, how did you, first of all, like, where did you get your start creating for the web? Like, and like, kind of how did you get there, and how did you end up, you know, kind of building things on Webflow?
Okay. Yeah. We'll start all the way back in the dial-up days when the internet was called AOL or America Online. And I was in middle school at the time, and one of my classmates, he IM'd me, okay, and he said, "Hey Nelson, I made a web page." I'm like, "What's that?" And he sent me a link, and it was an AOL member page, and it was just a blank white page with, well, not, it was a white background page, and the font was Times New Roman, everything basic, everything default, and it had his name, and he said, "I'm age 13, and here are my hobbies." There were no images, it was just that text. And I was like, you made that, and I'm able to see it on my computer. How? And then things just started to snowball from there, because more and more I wanted to learn how to create on the web, and it led to GeoCities. And I remember in high school, whenever it was lunch break, at the time there was only 4 computers in the school library that had access to the internet. And this isn't what those Ethernet cables that you see right now, they're what they call like BNC connectors or something like that. And it was like the computers were daisy chain. Anyways, yeah, I'm going too deep into the tech, and that's how nerdy I am. But like, I was like, whoa, these computers have the internet. I want to use it so I can maintain my GeoCities website. And what I would do is I would use the GeoCities wizard, and you would just fill out a form. And then once you press publish, you have a website. And then they have an advanced mode where you can see the code, edit the code, and then press publish. And then you see what you've done. And that's how I got to visually learn. I would make something in the basic version and then try to edit in advance and see what this weird HTML thing was doing. And that's what I would do in high school. I would try to run to the library as fast as I could right after class and maintain my website. And after school, I wasn't really good at school, but the thing I was good at was not doing homework, but going on GeoCities and figuring out what all this new code meant.
I've got two questions, though.
Okay.
Because I didn't know you were a GeoCities person. I got, like, that's one of the first tools I really dove into as well. And so I love it. But A, what was on your site at the time? Like, when you were maintaining your website in high school, what did that look like? I'm just curious about the content.
There wasn't much content. It was just me playing around. It was just concept. But the name of the website, because I was a big fan of MechWarrior 2 and I played NetMech on MS-DOS, yeah, I'm old, is Timberwolf's website. And then all I would do is just grab animated GIFs from everywhere and then see what they do and then play around with fonts. And it was just a playground for me. This internet thing was my new playground, and creating for the internet was my out, you know, and being one of those kids who was bullied in high school and like didn't really fit anywhere, not really into any cliques. That was my out. And that was my creative space. That's where I can be happy and be myself. And I remember I was a sophomore or junior, I was like in my computer lab class, and I asked the teacher, "Can I take this over? Can I take over a class and teach people HTML?" And she let me. And I was writing HTML on the board and explaining what each piece of code meant. and being just as excited as I am now when I'm whenever I'm doing my live streams or my YouTube videos, that excitement is the same thing as I was in high school. I learned something new. I need to show people. Pretty cool, huh? And then, yeah. So that's how it all got started. I mean, it went from GeoCities to a friend showing me, hey, I learned this cool tool called Photoshop and I can round the corners of boxes. To a friend saying, hey, I can make a beating heart in Flash. To, hey,
Flash. I've almost forgot about it.
Yeah. And then to an employer saying, wait, you use FrontPage? You don't know Dreamweaver? Call us back when you learn Dreamweaver. And fast forward to now, and it's all about Webflow.
So you started by creating with some of those tools. And I remember I got my start on FrontPage, and I'll never forget my sister took an online college class and was like, I can't build this website, but if you'll build my project for me for my final, I'll give you my copy of Macromedia Fireworks and Dreamweaver. And I was like, oh, sweet, done, you know, and just to get my hands on the software. That's funny. That's funny. So you started building, and then how did you enter this professional world of web development and making? What was that journey like? And ultimately, what I really want to know is how did you end up at Webflow?
So I kept building websites for myself and then for friends. And then I remember this one guy gave me my first ever website paycheck. He gave me $75 when I was in high school to build a website. And I brought the check to my dad. I said, I could make money. Look, whoa. And he saw the 75 and he was like, okay. But Asian dad, you know, 75, why isn't it? $7,500 kind of thing. But it like blew my mind that someone would actually pay me to do something that is just a hobby. And so I built him a site, and then more and more I would build other people websites and they would pay me. And then my dad helped me get my first gig as a civilian contractor for the Navy. And I worked in the same office as him, and I was the webmaster at the time for this certain detachment of the Navy, and that helped me understand office life. But then that got to another job, and then that into another job, and so forth and so forth. But how I got into Webflow was before Webflow, I was working at a biotech company, and it was a very corporate environment. But the director at the time, when I got first hired, was really cool and very hands-off, and just gave creative advice, creative direction whenever I showed him the project. Then I think a year and a half or so into my employment, he left the company because he's been working there for like 8 years or something. And so I was like, yeah, dude, you deserve it. Like, yeah, take it and go. And so another director came in, and it was a completely different environment. And at first it was really cool, but more and more it got more corporate, and I was becoming less happy at what I was doing. And then the whole corporate feeling of the office that I was shielded from with the last director was gone. The shield was gone, and I wasn't liking my life there. And in 2013, I went to a conference in Vegas called Future Insights Live, and I went to a talk, and this person talked about the past, present, and future tools of web design. And of course, I was like, okay, this is my jam. And two of the products that stood out to me for the future products were Macaw and Webflow. And both at the time only had a landing page. There was nothing else. It was just a landing page explaining what they're trying to do. Put your email here and if you're chosen, you'll get closed beta access. And I've said this story many times, but I love still talking about it because it was just meant to be, because Webflow reached out with a closed beta code 2 weeks after I signed up. And I was at work at the time, and I got that email, and I was like, oh, let me try this out. Put in my code, used Webflow for an hour, just 1 hour. And at the time with Webflow, there was no CMS. There was no e-commerce. You could only make one page. They were calling themselves a landing page builder. It wasn't a no code. It wasn't a CMS. It was nothing. It was just a landing page builder. And then I was just blown away because I didn't have to use Photoshop to mock up anything. I can just prototype inside of Webflow immediately. And the CSS and the HTML is done for me. It blew my mind so much that I needed to tell everyone on Reddit. And of course I got downvoted a lot, and I still have that Reddit link bookmarked. So if you want to put in your show notes, it's pretty funny what people are saying in there. After that, I was like, I need to tell more people about it. I need to tell my coworkers. I want to use it at work. I need to tell more people on the internet. I need to tell my wife. And she ignored me because she was like, no, that's not for me. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to meetups and talk about it. And you know what? I want to do even more. I want to start my own YouTube channel and tell more people about it. And then I saw that there's a community forum. So I was like, I want to help those people learn it. And I want to learn from them. And then it just kept going. My natural fandom, just like a lot of people now have with Webflow, I just want to help. And in 2.5 years later of helping on my own free time and talking about it, evangelizing for it and whatnot, Vlad emails me and asks if I want to join the team. And the rest is history.
How big was Webflow at the time that you joined?
I'm employee number 13.
Wow, so super early. What was the culture like there, like in the early days?
It was just very startup, you know? And coming from a public global company, biotech company that has a huge in-house development team, a huge graphics team, and a huge marketing team overall, to 12 other people, and I'm working remotely. It was hard for me to understand the environment, especially since I'm not in that office. I was working remotely, and so this was my first remote job, and I can't really tell you what the environment's like. But when I was at the office, just for say a week or a couple of days, whenever I was up there, they're really cool, very chill people. And it was like such a different, awesome experience. And plus, the founders, Vlad, Sergey, and Bryant, they're super cool. And the people that were on the team were super cool too. And I remember when going to my interview, coming from super corporate life, super in-house office life, my interview with the team was weird because I'm like, wait, they have a ping pong table? Wait, they're allowed to play video games during work? What is this? This is weird, you know? And so, yeah, they're very chill, very cool. But most of the time, they're heads down working. And, you know, it's just,
right.
Yeah.
Would you say that, I mean, you've been at Webflow since essentially the beginning. I mean, employee number 13 is really early. Would you say that the culture has really greatly like changed and shifted in like a major way, or has it like, you know, the values that the founders instilled, do you think they're still there today and like, you know, not much has changed?
The beautiful part about Webflow is that the culture hasn't changed much. When I first got there, it felt like people wanted to help other people, and we were doing something bigger than ourselves. We're doing something for the world. And that's what I felt before getting hired at Webflow, because I was like, this tool is special. Something's different about this tool. something's different about this community forum. Like, everyone's super duper upbeat and helping each other out, and it's just so nice. And, you know, during one of the retreats, I think it was the Portugal retreat, when we had like around 40, 60, around there, 40 or 60 people at the time. And people were wondering that, like, is the culture going to change when we hire even more people? And the founders straight up said, we're going to do our best to keep it the same. Make sure that everyone understands that kindness, you know, with each other. And the leadership team and the people team are doing a great job. And the people that the team is hiring, you know, is doing a great job. The part at the Portugal retreat, when the leadership team unveiled the dual missions, that's when it clicked for me. That's when I was like, this is a great culture. Because when I was in my previous job and when I was super duper happy there, I realized at the time, there's two pillars to a job: the people you work with and the work you do. If one of those pillars sucks, you're not going to like your job. So if the people there at your job suck, but the work you do is great, you hate it. If the work sucks, but the people are great, you're still going to hate it. And this is the first time I've been with a company that has great work and great people. So yeah, the culture hasn't changed much, and I'm glad that we're just building, even we're evolving that culture.
Yeah, big change too. Like, so many more people now than when you started. Employee number 13. Wow. I was employee number 80 or 81. So yeah, super cool, super cool. So you built so many things, Nelson, and I was just kind of curious, like, what's the favorite thing you've built, maybe on stream, or what's your favorite Webflow trick you like showing people? Because you're like, every time I show people this, they just kind of like mind blown, and they don't know what to even think about it. Like, what's that for you?
I don't know. There's not just one thing, because whenever a new feature or new trick that someone's found to use in Webflow or to do in Webflow, that's my new favorite thing. I can't pinpoint a favorite thing. If I were to choose, though, now that I'm thinking about it, if I were to choose, interactions. Interactions is basically Flash, but it works on mobile. So
I used to make Flash websites. I'm that guy everybody hated. I did that for a while. Actually wrote so much action script, I couldn't stand it.
Oh, action script. Oh my God. If you weren't writing action script, you weren't a good enough Flash designer.
Facts.
Man.
Facts.
That was so hard to learn.
So you tweeted something the other day that caught my eye. And so, since Nelson and I work together, we talk about some of these things sometimes, and he was working on some automation pieces and some backend stuff. And typically, and we've had this conversation a lot on our podcast, Zapier, Integromat, Zapier, Parabola, what have you. You tweeted, Integromat is not for humans. I want to hear, and it made me, I giggled and I was laughing, and I'd just love to hear your take. Like, what can you talk a little bit about, like, what led you to say that, and like your thoughts on both Zapier and Integromat?
Yeah. So, I've never used Integromat or Parabola until I had to. It was one of those things that I'm going to get to it when I do this one project. But then Gabby, part of our marketing team, who's leading the support for small to medium-sized businesses who need help during this time with the COVID pandemic happening, I volunteered to make a directory site, a directory of businesses that need help, and a directory of Webflow experts that want to help. And I was like, okay, here's the problem. They need to get Google Sheet data into Webflow. Okay, Zapier. Oh, but wait. The Google Sheet has things that should go into a multi-reference field. And also, some of this data needs to go into a single reference field. Okay. I don't think Zapier can do that. Let me go to Integromat. Oh, I know. Ben has some videos about Integromat. Let me watch that. Watched it, tried it, got frustrated. I was like, okay, let me try Parabola. Tried it, then got frustrated. Did I just bite off too more than I can chew? But this is what I like. I like challenges to the point where I'm like, I'm gonna just keep banging my head until it works. This is how I like to learn sometimes, you know? And over a weekend, I figured out that Zapier has a nice top to bottom workflow that's for simple automation, you know, A to B, B to C, C to D. And they do have some if then statements. They do have paths, but with paths, you can only have up to three. What if you need more than three paths, right? And then you go to Integromat, and you can have as many paths as you want thanks to their router, and you can have filters and whatnot. But in order to add data back into the Webflow collection, you need to put some JSON. And whenever you get an error when you're trying to run your scenario, you would get error 400, invalid. I'm not a code. This is why I love no code life. Explain 400. What does 400 mean, computer? And then I went to Parabola and I'm like, cool. Parabola has a Webflow import and a Webflow export. Let's do that. And so I tried that and their workflow is super, super awesome because it's the diagram like Integromat where you can just put blocks anywhere and chain them so you can see from a top-down view, overhead view of what you're trying to do. But it has the natural human language in their copy like Zapier. And you can see your data before it's sent in, before you run your automation. So I love Parabola. However, Parabola costs a lot to even test your stuff. Once you run out of credits, that's when it's like, oh, I gotta pay up to keep trying.
And errors count for credits too.
Ah, why? I mean, I'm gonna be talking about this in a future YouTube video in explaining how I made bettertogether.webflow.io. But the one that I'm using right now is Integromat because I learned how to speak computer. I understand what 400 means now, but I feel bad for the people who don't understand what 400 means.
Yeah, Integromat can be like the learning curve is definitely higher. And I think I mentioned this to their team whenever I talked to them, like even adding and connecting your account feels a little weird. And yeah, I think everybody's not there at an agreement. And you know, like there's some of those pieces that are really hard. And then you do things that you're like, I think this should work. And then it doesn't work. And then you're like, okay, maybe their documentation will tell. And then it's like, oh, no.
Non-existent.
So I'm going to have to.
It's very vague.
Yeah. And it can be hard. And then you're like, well, I just want to use Zapier. And then you get into Zapier and you're like, Zapier, exactly what you said. It won't do it. Or like, in order to do this, I'm going to have to pay like extra because to get the paths because they're only available in this plan up. And you're like, oh my gosh. So I either got to pay a ton of money to Zapier to get all this functionality and it still won't do what Integromat will do. Or you have to struggle through the, I think the thing about Integromat though, out of all of it that drives me like crazy is when you do like a web submission, a form submission hook and somebody fills out a form and the data comes in. In Zapier, you pull in the data once and you have it to just play with over and over and over again. And every time you want to test it in IntegraMAT, you're like, run it, open up the site, refresh the page, submit it one more time, and then it comes through and you're like, oh, no, that was wrong. And it reminds me of what it was like to code, because when I used to write code, I would, you know, you write HTML and CSS and you write it, you're like, yeah, this is how I want this to work. And then you publish and upload FTP, all that fun stuff, or push it. And then you open up the page, you're like, oh, no, that was the opposite of what I was actually trying to do. Let me jump back in the code and I'll make that change. And you jump back in the code and make the change. And you're like, okay, it's there, but just a few, I can see I'm a few pixels off. And you go back and you make the change. That was the frustrating part of coding. And I feel like IntegraMAT introduces that same piece where you're like, let me try it. No, let me go back and submit it again. No, let me go back and submit it again one more time. That's the point that just drives me absolutely insane.
Have any of you coded from scratch an HTML email?
No, but that sounds like a nightmare.
That sounds awful.
I have.
Tables within tables. And if you miss one small thing, your whole email is
toast. Yeah, forget toast. It.
And that's how it feels.
So with the Better Together website, did you end up going back to IntegraMAT from Parabola? Because we got it working.
It's currently running on IntegraMAT. There's four scenarios that are running. The four forms. But to import Google Sheet data, I used Parabola.
Gotcha. So you use both on the project, Parabola and IntegraMAT.
And you helped me. You were so clutch. Thank you so much. That magic cleaner thing, like, that was the answer. And if I couldn't figure that out, I was gonna tell Gabby, like, I can't do this project.
But it's just it's a weird thing about Webflow. It's like, because whenever you try to import multi-reference fields, it'll add a slash in, because I mean, I think it's just Parabola. I don't think it's a bug. I think it's just kind of how they're importing certain IDs and strings. And so shout out to Sachi from Parabola, because that's the only way I knew how to do that. When I sent you that little long Parabola snippet that you pasted onto your dashboard, that's the only way I was able to resolve that issue. But I'm glad you got it going.
Yeah, yeah.
So all that considering, like thinking about all those different pieces, what's one tool or one skill, like looking at all that you're like, I want to pick this up in the next 3 to 6 months, this year. Like, I really want to become a pro at X. What's on your radar?
I mean, if I had time, learning more about video and photography, you know, because I want to make my streams high quality. Like, whenever I watch a Rand Sigal video, I'm like, dang, that background and the lighting is perfect. I love it. And then when I look at Twitch streamers like Kit Boga, I love watching Kit Boga, or some of the like the very popular ones, like their camera setup and everything is super clean. And I'm like, I need to learn that. Like, I just want that crispness, you know? And so that's one of my goals. To figure out in, yeah,
I love it.
I think there's so much that I watch a ton of Rand's videos, and he is so good. And like, I've sat there before, I'm like, okay, his background is this, he's got blue light over here, he's got, you know, all this stuff going on. And then like, I've, you know, gone through and looked at all the gear that he has, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it looks so good. And I relate. It's like, but it's also fun to learn too. It's hard to figure out, like, to get it right. But then I don't know, I have fun like experimenting with the different setups and lighting and trying to just figure out what works, but it's hard.
Yeah.
I love that you watch Kit Boga though, because that's just comedy gold. Like, I find myself just, I can play those Twitch streams and just listen in the background and work. And then like something will happen and I'm like, hee. It's like, I'll go back and watch that.
Can you give a TLDW of what Kit Boga is? Cause I am unaware.
So anyway. Kit Boga, he's a popular Twitch streamer, and his whole purpose is to waste scammers' time, and also to educate the public on what would happen if you actually went ahead with doing what the scammers want you to do. And he's called so many different kinds of scammers, and that's his full-time job as a Twitch streamer who calls scammers, who has called him or left a message saying you owe money to the IRS, or you there's a virus on your computer. Or anything.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Or anything like that. And he's had calls. His highest record, I think, is around 32 to 34 hours. And it's not straight, but he wasted a scammer's time, 34 hours of a scammer's time throughout a couple of days. He knows how to push and pull, like meaning push them to where they get angry, like, oh, I'm going to hang up now. And then parts when he can pull where he's like, okay, I'm going to do what you say. I'm going to pay whatever you want me to pay. And it's just so funny what he's done to what he set up his computers to do to waste these people's time. And the best part is when they have the scammers, they log into your computer and they use remote access because you're giving them remote access. And he does a voice changer to sound like an old lady that doesn't know what she's doing. And he made his own web server on his computer so that he has a fake bank. And so to log into this fake bank, before it was called like Gull and Bull Financial. And so he would take a long time typing in his username and password. And then after you do that, there's a fake reCAPTCHA that they have to go through. And then there's a fake two-step verification text message that you got to wait through. And then you got to wait for a cookie message to go away. And he made it so that each web page loads slow.
It's terrific. And then he does this thing where like he has a timer run on there, so it shows how much time he's wasting. And he'll, like, if he's talking as the grandma, he'll put on like a grandma wig. And then he'll be like, he'll kill his mic to the phone and he'll be like, okay, here's what they're about to do. And he'll like literally explain the scam. This is what they're trying to get me to do. And then he'll go, okay, they're still seeing the screen that I was showing earlier, but let me flip this over. And he'll modify like a bank record to make the records look newer, like he's tried to do X, Y, and Z. It's brilliant.
The most brilliant part is the scammers, when they're logged in, they pretend that they've sent you money to your bank account, and all they're doing is right-clicking, inspecting the element, and changing the amount of money that is shown on your bank account. They just right-click, edit that element. However, Kit Boga puts a div on top of everything, so if you right-click, you're right-clicking on this div that's position fixed on the page and takes up the whole page, but it's a transparent background. So the scammers don't know what to do. They right-click it, and they're like, wait, what do I do now? I can't edit the number. I can't see the number. And they spend 5, 10 minutes trying to figure that out. But anyways, I can keep going on and on, Kit Boga. But
it's so good.
One side, he's very, very helpful and very, very funny. And it's funny to hear these scammers scream and get mad and angry that they wasted their time. On the other side, it is super sad that this is what is still happening, even during a pandemic. It's still, you know,
still happens.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So speaking of streaming, you've got Saturday streams going now. I've got to see a couple, one live, one not live. The one I got to hang out with live was the CMS. Freaking loved it. It was really great. So I saw, is this week's Interactions? Is that what you have posted? So what's coming? Like, what can people expect in the short term? What do you have planned?
So this Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time to 12 p.m., the live chat last week said, teach us interactions. And what I'm going to do is just do as much as I can, teach as much as I can about the very, very basics of interactions. But just this afternoon, I got confirmation from Thomas, what's his last name? Thomas Bosk. Yeah, I got confirmation that he will be on the stream live.
Shut up. Yeah. That's so great.
And so I'll be interviewing him, asking him how he learned about Webflow and all this stuff. And I'm going to go through his site and I'm going to break down how he did, like, probably two or three of the things that he did on his website. I'll break it down as simply as possible. Like, the hero row really, really got me. But if you actually look what he's doing, his hero row on his website, if you look what he's doing, he's just, he has a regular photo and a photo that's hidden until you hover over a certain area, and then it just fades in, and it's a transparent background of his headshot. Yeah, you got to just check it out. And when I look at his interactions, I'm like, they're so simple, but it's like magic. Like, if you're a magician, it's simple to you. But when you're the audience, you're like, whoa, amazing. And so I'm trying to, in the next stream this Saturday, I'm going to pull back the curtains and show people it's not really that hard. But the main focus of the stream for Saturday is interactions are fun, but what makes Thomas's website is he is a great curator of content. Yeah, that's what makes the site.
And I think a big difference is too, I was talking about this with somebody on the team this week. Like, I feel like, I mean, you're talking about like a magic trick. It's not like, I feel like so many people get into Webflow and they're like, okay, I'm going to build this interaction. I have this thing in my head and I'm just going to build it as I go. And a lot of times that works. But I feel like when I see things like this, it's people who really sit down and sketched it out on paper. They're like, oh, I kind of need it to do this. Or they played with it in Figma. Like, I'm going to start here. I'm going to get it to here. And just think about how they're going to transform those things. And really spending time thinking about the clever ways you can do it. And the more you plot ahead of time, the more complex you can make something pretty simple look, just by, you know, really, really focusing on how to get there. I don't know. I love this site though. Like, especially the phone screen where it starts blank and then it's like this prototype and then it becomes an actual app and then it flips over as you scroll. I'm like, God, it's so beautiful. It really looks so good. So Saturday interactions.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yep. And I'm just going to keep doing that because, you know, I want people to learn, and it's the same thing that, you know, I've been doing as from high school, teaching people HTML, teaching people how to use Webflow. But the future of my channel, I really don't know. I mean, I'm very much a spur of a moment kind of guy. You know, a lot of people who know me know that about me, that I see something that I can help with, I want to do it. Or see a new shiny toy or a new feature in Webflow or a new no code thing, I want to try it. I need to do it. So yeah, not sure where to go with it. But one thing that I'm still trying to convince my wife, but it's going to be hard to find time. I really want to do an education course with her, because
that would be really cool.
When we work together, it is so streamlined and is so fun that we can produce a full draft website in a week or two. We can launch a site within 2 weeks to a month. And in my wife, how she starts the design and how she knows already kind of what interactions are going to happen, but she leaves it to me to add interactions. And she's learned Webflow so much to the point where she creates the collection structures, and all I have to do, and she loves putting in the data into the collections too.
What? My least favorite part.
So she sets it up, and by the time it's time for me to build it inside of Webflow, she will go to the mall, back then when they were open, she will go to the mall with our daughter, and by the time she comes home, I'm done with it. And then she makes the final tweaks of pixel sizes and paddings and margins and whatnot, sends it to the client. I want to teach people how that's all possible.
Start to finish. I would watch.
Start to finish. It's beautiful.
I'm in. Tell me when it when's this launching?
I mean, we have no time right now. I wish we can have something available, but
are you telling me in the mid pandemic with a toddler, you don't have any free time? Is that what you're telling me? Because I read a tweet that was like, you're supposed to learn like all these different skills and read a million books and like launch 20 companies. I really feel like you should be able to do this.
Yeah, if you don't have a toddler.
Be more productive right now. Yeah.
sarcasm. No, I love it. I would watch that. I love it. I would love to see. We talked about this in No Code Roundup a little bit, but Tom Osmond tweeted about how it would be really cool to see what goes more into people making their portfolios than to actually see the finished product. Like how people get there, yes. What decisions, like why did they make that decision and how did they choose that content and how did they build it and why did they decide to build it that way and where did that all come from and where did you get the idea and the inspiration? And I'm fascinated by that personally. So
the why is more, actually the journey is more important than the final product.
1,000%. You're not going to get an argument out of me. I learned so every time, even for as long as I've used Webflow, I start building a project and I go, well, I learned I'm not going to do it that way next time. or I learned the next time I do this, I'm going to approach it this different way because that did not work the way I thought it was going to. That was a heavier lift than it should have been.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone who is listening is stuck in a project and is beating themselves over like, oh my God, I'm taking too long to do this project, or I'm taking too long to produce my portfolio or whatever. It's not about making it. It's not about the finished product. It's the journey. And if you think about it as a whole, as humans, now I'm all getting philosophical in my head, but like you look at what humans love to watch. We love to watch sports. And why do we love it? Because it's live progress. Like you can't fake the progress. I mean, winning a World Series, a Super Bowl or something, it's the journey of your team, you know? And it's not much about the win, it's the journey to there. I mean, what I love about movies is more about the behind the scenes. Like, what did it take for them to write that script, all the logistics, the CGI and whatnot, and same thing with UX designers. They love to write on their portfolio sites what they went through for each of their projects and their thought process. And it's fun, more fun to see that than, you know, just like, oh, here's my portfolio. Click here to see the final project. You know, I mean, no, there's a backstory.
1,000%. When I was still coaching, I remember we would wake up at 5:30 in the morning and meet the girls at the gym. I coached girls high school basketball, and it's like they're lifting weights, we're running. It's extra time on the floor, putting shots up, and we would they would always talk about it. Now's when we're winning, and we would preach that to them all the time. You're winning games now. I know it's October and it's 5:30 in the morning, and we don't have games for a month, but you're winning games a month from now, right now with the work you're doing. Right in this moment, the game matters, sure, but it's this process right here that really is super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nelson, do you find it difficult, like when you're streaming, to like if you come across a mistake or you get stuck on an error that you can't fix and there are people watching, and do you feel like under pressure, or do you feel like it's, I don't know, I mean, what's your perspective on that? Because I would think, you know, just knowing people are watching and trying to learn from you, I'm curious if that is like, do you typically play it safe on things that you know, front and back when you're streaming, or do you feel like you push it to the edge? I'm just curious.
I like to show failure on my streams because it's honesty, it's transparency. I am not the best Webflow designer. I'm not the best Webflow developer. I'm not the best no-code person. I'm just a person who just likes to click buttons a lot. And I've been clicking buttons since I was 13. And there's people who I think are better than me in all of this. And that's awesome. And so whenever I make a mistake, whenever I make a mistake live on the stream, sure, I feel kind of like, oh, I'm dumb. But then again, that's what everyone is doing. They're just clicking something and it's like, wait, it doesn't make sense. But I'm going to click more. I'm going to research more. I'm going to do what I can until it makes sense. And that's what I'm doing live on the stream. And, you know, that honesty is what I think a lot of people like. And it's the same thing, again, with sports. You see a team fail on a play, and then you see them learn from it quickly on the same game and then maybe win. That's beautiful to watch.
It's all about the journey. Like you said, all about the journey.
Yeah.
Love it. So before we get out of here, what would you say to people who are just starting their Webflow or their no code journey? Like, what advice do you have for people who are just getting started?
Don't be afraid to click stuff. You will fail, and that's okay. And people in the Webflow community want to help you succeed. Just ask questions. And if your question doesn't get answered, ask in another community. There's multiple Webflow communities. There's so many. There's a Webflow Discord. There's a Webflow Facebook page. Twitter is great. Just mention no code or Webflow. Use the hashtag. At me at the Pixel Geek, or Ben, Matt, or Lacey. Like, all three of them don't mind helping when we have time, of course. There's a subreddit now that's getting more traction. Ooh. So reddit.com/r/webflow. Go there. I'm there. I try to help as many people as I can there. But I mean, you know, don't be afraid. Everyone starts somewhere, and just keep going. Just keep clicking. And if it doesn't make sense, people are there to help you out.
Yeah, I love that. I used to, when I was working IT at a school, we'd have teachers who were like, well, I was going to click that, but I was afraid. I'm like, you're not going to launch a rocket to the moon. You're not going to start like the next nuclear war. Like, it's okay to, it's okay to click that button. Like, you know, click things. Break things. It's cool. Somebody's there to help.
CSS property called launch:rocket.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You're going to be fine. So yeah, I love that advice. I want to say thank you for coming on.
Hey, no problem.
We've loved having you and enjoyed the conversation. And for folks listening, really hope you enjoyed, and we'll catch you all next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to visualdev.fm. You can find us on your favorite social media platform at visualdevfm.